Hey, thanks for downloading the podcast. And remember, if you want to listen live, download the iHeartRadio app, download the TuneIn app, and just search for Fantasy Sports Radio Network, and you can listen to this program live. Also, if you want to watch the video of this podcast, check us out on YouTube, on Twitch, or on Periscope, and type in, you guessed it, Fantasy Sports Network. You'll find us there. Enjoy the show, and thanks for listening.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Fantasy Sports Today.
So here we are, hour number two on FST. A lot of stuff this weekend. It's always a good time of year. We just had the National Basketball Championship the other day. Congrats to Virginia Cavaliers. We got the Masters is ongoing. I'll be settling in and we're trying to watch some golf today. And the leaderboard is out of control. People are saying it's maybe the most loaded leaderboard ever because the first 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 players have all won majors. Francesco Molinari, Jason Day, Brooks Koepka, Adam Scott, Louis Oosthuizen, Dustin Johnson. Those are the leaders there. Those first five are tied at 7 under, and then Dustin Johnson's one shot. This breaks the record for most players through 36 holes that are within one shot of the lead. And it currently stands at 4. That's 9 players either hold the lead or are one shot off. That does include Tiger Woods, which the golf community and ESPN and CBS are obviously thrilled about because sure. They got Tiger Woods on the weekend and he matters. You got other guys in there, Ian Poulter and John Rahm, Matt Kuchar, Phil Mickelson, just 3 shots off the lead. So Justin Thomas right in the mix there. You got some other guys. You know, Ricky Fowler isn't that far off, but he's got a lot of work to do. Jordan Spieth. I don't know if Spieth missed the cut. He was awful on Thursday. Let me see. I'm looking it up. I think he might have missed the cut. Anyway, I'll get to that. Anyway, we're not going to do a ton of golf here. Let's see. I'm looking for his name right here. Jordan Spieth. Where is he? Come on, Jordan. Why can't I find this? Of course I can't. It's live radio, folks. This is what happens when you try to do something without doing the research. No, there he is. He's a -1. So he's got a long way to go. But at least they have him here for the weekend. So that's it. Odds right now as of Saturday morning. Koepka and Woods are listed as 13-2 co-favorites. So that's really just about Tiger Woods' money, right? People wanting to bet on Tiger Woods and wanting him to win, so he pushes down as one of the favorites. But he really is just one shot off the lead and playing well.
Yeah, I'm not a real big golf fan, but hopefully it gets down to it stays
not
close.
Not even the Masters show. You don't like sit in there on Sunday with a little drink in your hand and just watch. It's just so peaceful to watch on a big screen television.
Yeah, I'll turn it on. You know, my uncle is a big golf fan, so if he's over, he watches it. And if it's like a close finish, I get into it. But other than that, just I'll be honest with you. Baseball and football, my top two sports, I don't know. Maybe I got to get out on the links, and maybe then. Are you a big
golfer?
You play
with Kurtz.
You play
Kurtz? No, I'm not. I did play. I played once last year, but for a really long time, I hadn't played at all. My schedule does not lend itself the flexibility to get on the golf course. It just doesn't right now.
My understanding is once you take up the game, it takes over your life because you constantly want to try to improve your score, right?
Well, it's hard. It's hard as hell. Mm-hmm. You're going out there, you're shooting over 100. Like, you're like, I'm terrible, but it's fun. And you'll hit a drive right down Broadway, 250 yards or whatever, and you're like, I'm the greatest golfer alive. And then you triple bogey because you can't get up and down. So it's really frustrating, but And yes, my foot doctor, I have a foot doctor, just I got flat feet and I'm always dealing with these crazy foot issues. Not that anybody wants to know that, but he's consumed by it. That guy is consumed by it. He's consumed by watching it. He's consumed by playing. George Kurtz does play a lot, but I don't know that he's a big watcher of golf. He strikes me as the type of guy that, you know, he watches the few major sports and he likes to play golf, but I don't know that he's going to follow the Masters. Anyway, that's it. That's our golf segment for probably the entire year. So we're turning it over to the NFL. We'll talk NFL draft with Emory Hunt after this, and we'll recap that. But a couple of major stories. Adam Thielen agrees to a four-year extension. Deal's worth $64 million, with a max of $74 million. 35 guaranteed. He was entering the third season of a four-year $19 million base deal, so they had him at a real value. And he's 293 receptions in his 5 years. He topped a 1,000-yard mark each of the past two seasons and was a Pro Bowler both years. So he caught 113 passes for 1,373 yards and 9 touchdowns last season. He played in all 16 games. So that's it. Money for Adam Thielen. They lock him up, and obviously they're going to have to continue to try to keep this team together. They kept Anthony Barr. They have the two receivers with Diggs and Thielen. Obviously Cousins has big money. The talent is there for this team. They have to figure out the offensive line in order to keep this offense moving forward and improving.
Yeah, and a lot of teams need to do that, right? And just every year, we start to realize how important it is, not just the main positions, the offensive positions, but how much an offensive line can mean to a team. And Thielen definitely deserves the money. I mean, he's gotten better year after year. You know, it came into this season with thinking, was he going to continue his progression? And for the first several weeks, I think up until like week 10, he was like one of the, if not the top receiver in football. So I think it's money well spent, but you're right.
He had 100-yard games the first 9 weeks of the season last year. He had 100-yard games. So he was on fire. He paced a couple of my teams quite well. He didn't fall apart at the end of the year. He just, you know, the production slowed a little bit as the Vikings offense slowed. So that was a source of frustration. But Diggs got the extension last summer. Thielen gets the extension now. Obviously, they're pretty locked up. This team, despite, you know, they bombed out last year by not making the playoffs. That was a huge failure on their part. But I don't think that they're terribly far away. They just have to address the offensive line. I think the defensive line will be good enough. Mike Zimmer is a good defensive coach, even if he lacks in other areas. And I think they'll continue to improve. The talent is there defensively. It's there offensively. The offensive line really hurt them a lot. And I thought, obviously, the way in which they fired the offensive coordinator midseason was indicative of the fact that things weren't working. Not for Cousins, not for the offense as a whole. But now they will move on into 2019. And I would suspect that they'll be a team that would be, you'd have minus odds for them to make the playoffs. I think there'll be an expectation for the Vikings to make the playoffs this season.
Yeah, I agree with you. Are you a Cousins guy? Because you know, he seems
not
to be
really
a polarizing guy. I mean, I'm kind of lukewarm about him. I didn't like what he – I mean, I owned him on a couple of teams because – yeah, and I owned him on a couple teams, you know.
It's okay to be lukewarm on Kirk Cousins. That's how I am, which is why we don't really think he's worth $84 million guaranteed, right?
Right.
I understood why the Vikings did it. They were close. They didn't think they could continue to get it done with Case Keenum, and I think they were probably right. But I guess that's really the problem. Kirk Cousins is pretty good. He can put up good numbers. Something keeps happening in these big games where he doesn't produce and they don't win. He's like the anti-Alex Smith.
Alex Smith was,
you know, prior to his injury, Alex Smith was a guy that was seen as a winner. And even though there are holes in his game, at some point, at the end of the day, when you keep seeing him racking up wins and a high winning percentage, and conversely, Cousins falling apart in these big primetime games, it starts to point back to you at some point. I try not to, on a 53-man roster, try not to castigate one guy for not being able to win games. But if it happens consistently, there's something to it generally, right?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I agree with you. But speaking about the Vikings, just one last point on them. We need 16 games out of Dalvin Cook this season, no?
Yeah. Yeah. That's a problem, too. Like, his not being healthy was a problem, too. You know, Marshall Faulk, who I did the shows with this past season.
Yeah, one of the most durable backs in football.
Yeah. And, yeah. And that's a great point, because his comment when that stuff was going on, when Dalvin Cook and Leonard Fournette really couldn't get out there, and the rumors being like, well, they're not 100%. Marshall's opinion was, and he wasn't pointing fingers at anybody in particular, but his attitude is that you're never going to be 100% at running back.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're a little banged up and you feel like you should take a week off, you really shouldn't. It's like you just have to figure out a way to get out there when you're not 100%, because you won't be. It's not a position that lends itself to you being healthy all the time. You're going to have a bum ankle or a sore shoulder or a swollen knee. He's like, you just have to get out there. He's like, if it's something that you're going to get injured doing, then don't do it. But he just thought that there were a couple of guys, like the ones that I mentioned, that maybe could have been out there and were taking a little bit of extra time. Maybe it's a generational thing. Maybe it's the teams are more careful with players now. But Marshall was of the opinion that guys like Dalvin Cook need to be out there even when they're not 100%.
No, I like Marshall Faulk, you know, helped a couple of my teams in the back in the day win some fantasy championships. And like I said, he was basically a 2-for-1 deal. I mean, if you look at his receiving numbers on top of what he did on the ground, just amazing stuff. And, to his point, he's probably right.
Yeah, Reuben Foster, in other news, he's fined 2 game checks by the NFL. But he's back in business. He can play for Washington as soon as they get started next year, assuming nothing else happens. So he's going to resume his playing career. He's fined 2 game checks, and he will not be suspended any further. Suspended 2 games at the start of last season. Then there was another potential domestic violence incident. It has been investigated. They've apparently watched video with that they obtained from law enforcement officials. And he's back. So I had Reuben Foster on a dynasty team, and when I saw that last incident, I actually cut him from my dynasty team. I just thought, like, I can't even deal with these headaches anymore, and this guy seems like a bad guy, and I can live with it if somebody else picks him up and he's productive. He's obviously a really talented player. I thought his career would take off, but due to suspensions and injuries and everything else, it has, you know, it has stumbled to start. He's now on his second team in his career, but he really could be a huge addition to them, especially if he plays motivated based on these other things that have been going on with him. So it could be an interesting scenario for Washington and really help their defense long term. Now, they are going to be an interesting team to talk about in terms of the draft, because they have a whole bunch of quarterbacks on the roster. I think there's 5 quarterbacks on the roster right now. But if you got 5 quarterbacks, as the saying goes, you don't got one. So they're really going to have to figure something out come draft night. Is it going to be Josh Rosen that they make a trade for? Do they sit there at 15 and wait to who falls to them, whether it's Drew Lock or Daniel Jones or even maybe Dwayne Haskins? Or do they make a move and go up and trade for somebody? So what do you think Washington's going to end up doing? They seem to be in the Josh Rosen sweepstakes. Talk has cooled on that as of late, but I think that'll heat up here in the next 10 days.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, like you said, I mean, Colt McCoy, Case Keenum, Alex Smith's career in jeopardy, definitely his season.
He's not playing this year, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm looking at some mocks that have them going after, you know, making a trade and possibly going after Rosen. Others have them going after a wide receiver. I mean, they definitely need to explore opportunities. I mean, wouldn't be surprised if they pick up a quarterback off of, you know, this draft. I mean, yeah, is Case Keenum the answer? Probably not.
I think Case Keenum was somebody they made a move for because it was in such flux at the end of the year. They needed to do something to not have, just in case.
Yeah.
It's actually a pretty smart move. Just in case their initial plans don't work out. Like, say Arizona trades Rosen to somebody else. So they're in the mix. I don't think there's any question. I think it's the Giants, Washington, and Miami. And I don't think Miami's going to do it. I really think it's those two teams, Washington and New York. It could be somebody else. But those are the likely destinations for Rosen. So say he ends up in the Giants, and the Giants now have their long-term plan. Eli can play this year, or Rosen can beat him out, and then Eli sits on the bench as a veteran. So that's the Giants' long-term quarterback plan. Then what does Washington do? Then they have to make a move for one of these guys. Arizona is obviously going to take Kyler Murray. And then, all right, the Giants. So the Giants won't have a quarterback, but maybe other teams are making moves. Maybe the Broncos, like Dwayne Haskins or Drew Locke, and then that takes away one of their opportunities. And then Miami takes the other quarterback. So then what do? Then they end up picking Daniel Jones, who they may not like that much. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, you just have to have contingency plans. And I think Case Keenum is just that. Even if he starts this year, I think it will be in front of a developmental quarterback, or they're working with Josh Rosen to get him accustomed to the system. So I think that's where it's at.
Yeah, their best bet is to get Rosen, because they could slip him in quicker than if they got somebody off the that they picked up from the draft. But yeah, I guess you're right. Yeah, Case Keenum, a guy maybe that could start maybe the first three or four games of the season, then step aside.
Yeah, absolutely. I do think Jay Gruden is a pretty good offensive coach. I think he's hampered by that front office. I think Bruce Allen and Dan Snyder have done that team no favors. So I think they had a pretty good hire there with Jay Gruden. I think from an offensive football standpoint, he is somebody that can work with quarterbacks, and it could be a good landing spot for somebody like Josh Rosen. So we're going to get into it with Emory Hunt after the break. We'll ask him some of these QB questions and anything else draft related. He's going to be with me on draft night, so I'm excited about that. And we'll line him up with some questions. What is one question that you're curious, that you've been getting more curious about, whether it's related to the Jets or Giants or anybody else?
I'm questioning why Haskins is now looked at maybe later in the first round. Like, what's causing the people to shy away from him a little bit? I've seen in mock drafts, he's going down the ladder a little bit.
Yeah, good stuff. So we'll come back with questions for Emory Hunt on the other side. It's Mike and Joe on FST. We'll be right back.
From the NFL to the NBA, DailyRoto.com is the place to win millions in daily fantasy. You can get the best DFS NFL coverage all season long for a price of $129.99, or dominate the entire daily fantasy sports realm with the Elite Package at $59.99 per month. If you use the promo code FNTSY, you get 10% off your DailyRoto package. Go to DailyRoto.com, pick your NFL or Elite Package, enter promo code FNTSY, and you'll be on your way to becoming the next Daily Roto millionaire.
Welcome back to FST. Mike and Joe bringing in Emory Hunt in here in a minute. Talking NFL draft. Do we have Emory with us? Is he here? Do I hear the voice of F-Ball Game Plan? Emory Hunt. Not sure if he's here yet, but can I hear him? Is that you, Emory?
Yep. I'm here.
What's up, man? How you doing? Sorry, I raced back to the microphone just in time. So good to have you back on the show and talking NFL draft. So Joe had that question right before the break. Why is it that Dwayne Haskins is falling down certain draft boards?
Well, here's the thing. We don't know if he's falling in the real NFL draft boards. He's falling in the media draft boards. Right. So you always have to take that with a grain of salt, because we don't really know what's going on until it actually happens. I think the media right now is doing a good job of creating content. So that's why you see mock draft 7.0 and mock draft 13.0. You know, you switch up names, you create the news, then you talk about the news. And when really in the NFL, nothing probably has changed because we don't know what their boards look like.
Go ahead, Joe.
Yeah, that's a great point. Yes. Sterling Shepard just got a contract extension with the Giants, and there was some rumors that the Patriots also had been interested in him. So can we get a sense that the Pats are, maybe the Pats aren't tipping their hand, but do we think that that's maybe where they're going to go with pick number 32? I was looking at, like you said, there's tons and tons of material out there with mock drafts and all this. I saw maybe Deebo Samuel going to them. Do you think that based on the rumors that the Pats had been interested in a Sterling Shepard, that they might be going after a wide receiver with their first pick?
I mean, it would make sense just based off their personnel. You know, we say this a lot where when you look at the New England Patriots on paper, you don't know how they win games because they don't necessarily have the most quote-unquote talented team. And, you know, it's just on the perimeter. So if you look at their depth chart right now, they have Philip Dorsett, Julian Edelman, Maurice Harris, Bruce Ellington, Braxton Berrios, and Matthew Slater. So there's, yes, it's probably a big tip of where they're probably going to go with that first-round pick, because right now, outside of Julian Edelman, who's well into his 30s, they don't have much that really threatens you on a perimeter. So that's probably why they were in the market for a receiver, and that's probably why they're going to take one at pick 32.
Yeah, I mean, I really could see that. Emory Hunt, you can find him on Twitter, at FBallGamePlan. He's going to be he's going to be joining us on draft night. It'll be myself, Dave Martinez, Emory Hunt, and possibly somebody else in there. We are waiting to hear back on somebody. So I'll just tease that. It could be an interesting draft night. But it might be a little bit more tame than last year, but we'll still have fun with it. Last year it was an interesting study of live radio, but we did have a lot of fun while doing the draft. So we did a mock draft the other night, Emory, and you're going to be seeing some video that we filmed it. We didn't do it live. We filmed it, and you'll see a lot of video clips here. So the first few picks seem to be, like, relatively set in stone. The Kyler Murray thing, I feel like, here's my conspiracy theory of the day. I think Goodell or somebody may have had a conversation with Arizona, like, please don't trade Rosen yet, because the second you do that, everybody knows who you're going to pick. So we want a little bit of intrigue as we get close. Like, think about that. If they trade Rosen right now, everybody knows who they're picking. Everybody sort of knows anyway, but at least it has the illusion of keeping it a mystery for now, correct?
Correct. But you also saw this last year with the Browns. They traded DeShone Kizer right after the combine. And I guess because the conversation last year was, okay, we know the Browns are probably
going to
take
a quarterback. Right.
Well, which quarterback
right.
will they? So with this one, I mean, they could have played it with the two guys and said, you know what? Which one will you take? Will you take Haskins or will you take Murray? But it seems like because of the fit, as far as Cliff Kingsbury and what he's talked about before, and you know, the infatuation with Kyler Murray, they're going to play this thing out, and that is going to be the sole focus. Or, you know, the other side of the coin is that it could be the biggest bluff job in NFL draft history, where he talked about this so often that everyone believes it's going to happen when the entire time. They either wanted Nick Bosa or Quinnen Williams or someone else other than Kyler Murray. And another option would be maybe they take Kyler Murray for someone else and trade him to that team that also wants Kyler Murray. And therefore, they can take the guy that they want and swap the – kind of like a Phillip Rivers and Eli Manning deal again. So there's a ton of options, a ton of conspiracies out there, a ton of scenarios. I'm just excited to see how it all plays out on April 25th.
If you're them, this is a really quick follow-up. If you're them, would you take Murray and trade Rosen, or would you keep Rosen?
I would. You know what? I would keep Rosen and build around the rest of the roster. But if you look at Rosen and say, okay, well, at the end of the day, this guy is a lot better, then I have no problems with taking Kyler Murray or Dwayne Haskins, because they are the better players over Rosen. So I can understand that aspect as well. If you're going to say, okay, we just want to take the better team, and we know the better player, and we know right now that what we saw last year is probably Rosen's ceiling. You know, he's going to be good, but is he going to be, top 10 quarterback in the league? I mean, do we really think Jared Goff is a top 10 quarterback in the league? So I think if you want to take a guy that's just flat out better at one of the more important positions, then I'm all for it. But I would probably use that pick to take one of the best players in the draft and go from there.
All right. Let me turn our attention to wide receivers. I was noticing Marquise Brown, wide receiver from Oklahoma. Some of these mocks have him going ahead of DK Metcalf. Brown was looking at his draft profile, explosive speed, could turn short catches into big plays. Concern with him, it seems to be his frame, 5'9", 166. Is that going to be a big issue? Like, if you're an NFL team, would you prefer to take a guy like DK Metcalf, obviously super talented as well, as a Superman frame, or does the 5'9", 166, the small frame with Brown, worry you in terms of his durability?
I look at it like this, where, you know, to me, size doesn't equate to injury, because if that was the case, Brandon Jacobs would have been the most indestructible running back in football history. You stayed injured. And a guy like Warwick Dunn at 5'9", 178 would have been injured his entire career if he ran for over 10,000 yards. So injuries, you don't worry about injuries until they happen. And you always look at guys that have had injury history, and injuries are a freak occurrence. But when you look at both guys, DK Metcalf has the neck injury, and you hope that is a one-time thing. But Marquise Brown seems to have these little small nagging injuries that keep popping up. Foot injury, little shoulder injury. So you wonder how that is going to carry itself going forward. We saw the same thing with a guy like John Ross, who had an extensive injury history at Washington, and he's had that same type of bad luck in the NFL. So I think that's more of a telltale sign than height, weight, speed. So I think because I like what Metcalf brings to the table as far as a big X receiver, juxtaposed with a guy like Brown does, I think there's better receivers at Brown at his position as a flanker. I would probably lean toward Metcalf, although Brown is a dynamic option. I just think Brown is probably a little bit more one-dimensional as opposed to a guy like Metcalf.
So, all right, we talked about Metcalf and Brown. What other wide receivers do you have with a first-round grade? I can tell you, just to tease it, in our first-round mock draft, and this was a combination of myself, Rich Germanello, Joe Lisi, Gabe Morenci, Frank Stampfl, Joe Ranieri, Keith Irizarry. We all sort of picked for different teams. I picked for the Packers, and that was the first wide receiver off the board. I went with Metcalf. I could see a world where Metcalf and Adams together could form a pretty significant duo. You have to take into account the fact that they did draft three wide receivers last year, Jamon Moore, Marquez Valdez-Scantling, and Equanimeous St. Brown. But my thought process as I was going through it is like, well, yeah, those guys are nice to have, but are you going to wait for one of them to break out? Is it going to be Marquez Valdez-Scantling? There's something there. But having those two huge weapons for Rodgers would be something else. So anyway, my long diatribe is to say that we picked Metcalf, A.J. Brown, Paris Campbell. Those were the only three wide receivers in the first round. I assume you have first-round grades on those three, but who else do you have first-round grades on?
Well, I have first-round grades on N'Keal Harry, Paris Campbell, D.K. Metcalf, and Anthony Ratliff Williams. But I know Anthony Ratliff Williams probably won't go in round one. So if I had to take a receiver in round one, the first one would probably be N'Keal Harry because of his versatility, his ability to help out on special teams, and, you know, the fact that this is a guy that could take a short pass a long way, and you want guys that are good after the catch because that's how we play in the NFL. That's the way the game is you don't go deep down the field consistently. You got to win in the short to intermediate area and allow yourself to make plays after the catch. So I think Harry does that better than anyone in this receiver group. A guy like Paris Campbell with his speed probably could thrive in the short to intermediate game. We saw him do that at Ohio State. Once they moved him inside, instead of trying to make him an outside receiver like he did earlier in his career, he thrived as a slot guy underneath and utilized his rack skills to his effectiveness. also in conjunction with a guy that's deadly active that allows you to run as a pitch with ease. So I think when you look at those guys, it would probably be where I would go in round one because of what they bring to the table, how the game is played at the NFL level, and what I see there can be best utilized because of their versatility.
Switching over to tight ends, I'm seeing Hockenson sometimes being mentioned as the first tight end that should go off the board. Noah Fant is mentioned, Irv Smith. I mean, do you think that it's important to get one of these guys in the first round? Or if you're a team, can you wait maybe for a Waring tight end from San Diego State? It seems that the Hockenson has the total package where he could catch passes and also he's also a very good run blocker.
If you're bringing up run blocking early for a tight end, you don't take that player in the top 10. This is where I always want to ask the other question where is Hockenson better than O.J. Howard as a prospect? Is he better than Evan Engram was as a prospect? Is he better than Kellen Winslow, Jeremy Shockey, or, you know, those guys? Because if not, you don't take that guy in the top 10. You know, you don't take a guy in the top 10 where he may not be better than his teammate. You know, so I look at that as, you know, I don't know where this Hockenson hype came from that vaulted him as a top 10 talent. I think he's a good player. You know, I don't think he's a top 10 player in this class, in my opinion, at that position. I think his teammate, Fant, is a half, you know, is slightly better because he's a better athlete. But also, when you look at flex, if you want to look at a flex tight end, you know, no one's talking about Alize Mack out of Notre Dame. No one's talking about Jay Sternberg out of A&M. To me, those guys are probably more along the lines of what teams want at the receiver position as a tight end. But Fant and Hockenson, I think, are guys that can survive in line. But, you know, with this position, again, if you're not a game changer and just, you know, extremely explosive on film, like more recently O.J. Howard was, and even he went in the pick 20. So I don't think Hockenson is better than O.J. Howard as a prospect, so I don't know why he would garner top 10 hype. But you have to take these guys in the first round to me because, you know, how the position is not as deep. And so whenever that run on tight ends go, you probably, if they're the top two on your board and you know there's only quote-unquote two, you're probably going to take that guy in the first round because you don't know, if especially if you have a big gap between your number one tight end and your number two tight end on your draft board, you take him in the first round just to make sure you secure his rights. But I would be hard-pressed to take a guy that isn't as game-changing as those other tight ends in the top 10.
Yeah, and you got to get another guy like Josh Oliver from San Jose State that gets some good grades. He would probably be a day two to day three pick, and you mentioned Sternberger earlier. I think you made an interesting point. Like, when we were doing the mock draft, first of all, I had the Packers, and I was just assuming one of the tight ends would fall, but it didn't happen. Even in our mock draft, Fant and Hockenson went back-to-back, I think at 9 and 10, to the Bills and... Yeah, I'll pull it up right now, to the Bills and Broncos. So, you know, I think the good point that you made about, well, if these guys aren't top 10 players, don't draft them in the top 10. There is some, there obviously has to be some attention paid to the needs that you have on the team. But if you're overdrafting to that extent, you're going to find yourself disappointed, particularly if you aren't prepared to use the player to his strength. We saw a really, really good example of this last year, Emery, in that Eric Ebron was effectively a bust for the Lions, and he goes to the Colts, and he immediately explodes again back onto the NFL scene, catching all kinds of touchdowns. They have two interesting and talented tight ends in Indianapolis now, but you really do have to be prepared, and you and I have talked about this before, to use the player to his strengths. We saw in recent years the Lions are a perfect example of that because of Ebron and even Lakin Tomlinson, a guard that they had drafted.
Yeah, and here's the thing, too. When you look at a football team, do you ever find yourself saying, man, they are a tight end away from being where they need to be? You know what I'm saying? And as much as people love to dump on a running back position and say it doesn't matter, you got those same people saying take T.J. Hockenson, who's, you know, a good player, in the top 10 at a position where you don't really notice it right off the bat. Oh, man, this team desperately needs a tight end in order to get to the Super Bowl. No, it doesn't work that way.
Good stuff. So that's Emory Hunt. He's going to be on the live draft show with myself and Dane Martinez and a player to be named later. So looking forward to seeing you, man, in like the 12 days from now. I'm sure we'll be talking again next Saturday and in the run-up to the draft. So we'll have a good time, and we'll continue to see your breakdown. So follow him on Twitter at FBallGamePlan. Thanks, Emory. I'll talk to you again soon.
Appreciate you guys.
Thanks, Emory.
So that's it. We'll come back. We'll break down exactly what Emory was talking about, tight end position, wide receivers, and more. It's Mike and Joe on FST. We'll be right back on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. We'll follow up with that draft information and continue the debate.
From the NFL to the NBA, DailyRoto.com is the place to win millions in daily fantasy. You can get the best DFS NFL coverage all season long for a price of $129.99 or dominate the entire daily fantasy sports realm with the Elite Package at $59.99 per month. If you use the promo code FNTSY, you get 10% off your DailyRoto package. Go to DailyRoto.com, pick your NFL or Elite Package, enter promo code FNTSY, and you'll be on your way to becoming the next Daily Roto millionaire.
This is very dramatic. Is this like a Game of Thrones thing?
This is the theme song to Game of Thrones.
I don't watch it.
This is
Look at that. I don't even the show. I can't identify the bands that I like, but I from a show I don't watch. I got the
theme
song.
How's that?
That's pretty damn good. I don't know. It just felt like it because I know that. What is the new season is coming out or the finale?
Tomorrow,
or something?
Tomorrow night, Sunday night, the final season. Right. I think there's only maybe 7 or 8 episodes, and I enjoyed watching Game of Thrones. But the thing is, a lot of these shows, Mike, there's so much time in between seasons that you tend to and there's only like 10 episodes or so a season. You tend to forget what happened, so you kind of almost need to rewatch some of the stuff. But I've been trying to rewatch it.
It's probably by design. You're a fan. I might be the only guy in America that hasn't watched this show. It's just I can't do shows. It's too hard with my schedule. I don't watch anything other than football during football season. Basically, I reserve like one night a week to watch like one show with my wife. That's usually Modern Family because she loves it. I've gotten tired of that show.
That's the comedy, right? With Ed O'Neill, the guy from I've seen bits and pieces of it. Very funny show. Yeah.
It is funny. I'm not a huge fan. It's funny. It's that show is like coming to a close now.
This is the last season as well?
Yes. I think there's probably it's probably 2 seasons too late, but nonetheless, just the way sitcoms are. Like, sitcoms just get tired over time, right? It's the same bits over and over again. I find that to be the case across all sitcoms, but particularly if one sitcom is on for too long, they just start doing the same bits over and over again.
They jump the shark.
Yeah, exactly right. Exactly right. Perfect example. So, shout out to Fonzie. So, Game of Thrones coming out tomorrow. I knew that was coming out, so that's why I figured Sean was throwing that in there. Anyway, we'll get back to that in a moment. But forget tuning into Game of Thrones. Just tune in to Make It Rain with Joe Ranieri and Dane Martinez on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. It's every weekday from 6 to 9 a.m., getting you started early as they start your morning doing their best to get you addicted to sports wagering. Get all the sports wagering information you crave for NHL playoffs, NBA playoffs, Major League Baseball, and live 2019 Masters action. If you're able to watch the show and not just listen, catch the video feed live or on demand on the Fantasy Sports Network YouTube page or on your favorite OTT provider. It's Make It Rain on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network and Fantasy Sports Network YouTube page, weekdays from 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. Eastern. So there you go. That is it for that read. And Game of Thrones, coming out. Other shows, like there's so many good shows that I just never watched, Joe. I just never watched them. I never saw The Wire. I never saw Breaking Bad. No.
Oh, my God. Yeah, yeah. Wire I missed and I need to watch, but Breaking Bad, definitely something.
Right.
Like,
people think
when your schedule changes.
Like, this guy is a jerk. Who doesn't watch Breaking Bad?
No, 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 no.
And I know
you're
I would love
better than all of us.
Bad.
Because you're being productive.
I would love
it. Just... yeah, you probably would, because it's, you know, probably like one of the top, we'll say 20, 25 shows. Probably even, you know, maybe top 10, depends. But one of the best shows.
One show I saw through its entirety that I was addicted to was Mad Men. So I watched every episode of that.
Yes, enjoyed that a lot.
So... Mm-hmm. And that show had long breaks in between seasons, mm-hmm. like year and a half breaks in between seasons. So that one I started, God, before we were married and before we had kids and all that kind of stuff. So I was able to kind of get through it. It was really the reason I stopped, and I really love movies and I love TV, but the reason I really stopped watching was a confluence of events. It was me obviously becoming a broadcaster and a lot of free time. Formerly free time was taken up by us doing shows on weekends and stuff like this.
Researching too.
Getting prepared the nights before and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, watching various shows and watching games and that kind of stuff. So it's just part of the job. So that replaced it. And then any other free time was taken up by having kids, and then you're tired and you can't watch a show. And I got married to somebody that doesn't really like the same types of shows that I like. Like, she would never watch Breaking Bad with me. She probably wouldn't watch Game of Thrones because there's a violent component to it. The thing that's hard for Game of Thrones, too, with these breaks, from what I understand about it, is there are very complicated storylines.
Absolutely.
Characters that keep getting reintroduced and dismissed and reintroduced. So you have to almost have a cheat sheet next to you as to who this person is. So that would be hard for me until I have time to sit down and maybe binge watch it. It'd be more satisfying to me if I didn't binge watch, actually.
Well, like Mad Men, I enjoyed it immensely, but I ended up watching it pretty much maybe when there's one season left. So there weren't the big gaps where I had to wait for the new season to come. So, you know, I'd watch it when I had time on demand. And so maybe that's what you do. Maybe when you have time, when your schedule changes, you can get into, you know, because right now, like I said, I've been rewatching it when I get a chance. It's almost like an escape. In an hour escape from, you know, the full-time job and the researching that we do here. You know, sometimes you need that.
I get it. Yeah, I totally understand. So, you know, I'll even go back. I found myself on occasion watching an old episode of The Sopranos, even though I sort of watched everything. The only I didn't see the first scene of The Sopranos, but everything else, you know, I got on. So, anyway, so we had Emery Hunt on. Great information, as always.
Absolutely.
We got into the tight end thing a little bit, and we got into the wide receivers. Anthony Ratliff-Williams is a guy that he really likes that you won't see on any first-round mocks. He played at North Carolina, 6'1", 205. I think Emery thinks he's just a really prototypical NFL wide receiver. Good size, good hands, ability to separate, and a player that you will probably see drafted on day two, maybe even day three. I would guess he's a second round guy, but nonetheless, Anthony Ratliff-Williams is a name that he has mentioned a bunch of times that you may not be hearing from some of the other experts. So for you, so your team is the Giants, yes? Or the Jets?
Giants,
right? That's what I think.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So right now they've got the two picks. In our mock draft the other night, so this is one of the oddities of our mock draft. So our mock draft that we do in Fantasy Sports Radio Network, I am basically in charge of getting people to pick. But what I say is pick who you would want, not who the team wants or who you think the team is going to take. So some of them are in line with what the predictions are. Rich Ciaramanello picked Kyler Murray overall. I think to some extent, when the rumors are so heavy, there's just an assumption that Kyler's going to be picked there. And Rich assumed the same, that, you know, they're changing the coaching staff. Kingsbury's in love with Murray. He's just going to pick him there. So I'll go with that. The Niners are really in a pretty lucky scenario where it seems like the Cardinals are rebooting everything and they're going to end up with Nick Bosa, who's probably the best player in the entire draft. very similar to his brother. Like a really good motor and the ability to be a classic defensive end with pass rush capabilities, but also can stop the run. So we went down through Josh Allen, Quinnen Williams, Devin White, and then it gets down to the Giants. And Greg Sussman picked Montez Sweat, this edge rusher from Mississippi State who's flown up draft boards. Very productive in 2 years at Mississippi State, 6'6", 260. He had an irregular heartbeat. There was some off-field stuff prior. He transferred from Michigan State. So if the Giants either acquire Rosen or decide not to take the QB there, would you be okay with an edge rusher there?
Yes. Yeah. I've even seen the CBS Sports had them taking Gary Rashan. But yeah, that's definitely a need. And you know what? I mean, I wouldn't have a problem with the Giants, trading, let's say, the 17th pick for a Josh Rosen. But then again, listening to Emery, I kind of questioned that because he's so knowledgeable. And it sounded like he put a little bit of the onus on Rosen's bad season, more on Rosen than I had. I put it on the Cardinals' supporting cast, the terrible offensive line. But, you know, initially I
said,
hey,
there was no chance for any quarterback to be successful in that system last year. Coaching issues, general manager issues, mm-hmm. no offensive line. They were any quarterback that was in that system last year would have failed.
Right. No, anyway. I agree with you. Yeah. But let's say if the Giants do trade, let's say their 17th overall pick for Rosen, as a community that follows football, kind of thought that last year's class of quarterbacks was like one of the strongest in a while. So Giants would be getting basically the a first-round pick, a player that was thought to have first-round talent this year. And let's say if it doesn't work out, next year's quarterback class is supposed to be a lot stronger than this one. So, I think that's the way I would go. But again, listening to Emery, made me think twice about, and I agree with you with what you just said, that no quarterback really could have had a productive season in Arizona this year. But it makes me wonder a little bit about Rosen.
Look, the Giants specifically, I know we focused a lot on the Giants, but they are a really key part of the draft. They have two first-round picks, and they're conceivably mm-hmm. trading for Josh Rosen. So they're going to be a big story. Washington and New York are extremely key points in how the first round goes, because mm-hmm. there is likely going to be some movement for some of these quarterbacks. Likely, not definitely, but likely, because the Broncos have to be looking at somebody long term too. Flacco isn't their long term plan. They just thought he'd be mm-hmm. better than Keenum, so mm-hmm. they may take a developmental prospect like you hear that they love Drew Lock, but maybe there's a lot of smoke screens going on right now. For the Giants, it's really not that difficult in this respect. They just had to go through this process last year of grading all the QBs. Mm-hmm. If they didn't, then everyone should be fired. They couldn't have been locked in on Barkley like that. They shouldn't have drafted him anyway, in my opinion, as great a player as he is. I just didn't think I don't think any running back is quite that valuable. So, anyway, they just had to go through the process of grading all these guys last year. You had four top 10 picks with Baker, Sam Darnold, Josh Allen, and Josh Rosen, who was picked 10th overall. Now you're having mm-hmm. to go through this process. We brought in Kyler Murray, which they did. He visited their offices this week. Then you have Dwayne Haskins. You have Drew Lock, Daniel Jones, which you hear rumors that the Giants really love Daniel Jones. Then you have other guys like Ryan Finley and Will Greer. So let's just call that the top five. There may be other names you want to throw out there, but for all intents and purposes, those are your first-round guys. Finley's not really a first-round guy, but you never know. Somebody could take a flyer. So all they have to do is compare all their grades from last year and this year. And if they determine that Rosen is better than everybody this year and or mm-hmm. better than everybody other than Kyler Murray, because they don't have the opportunity to get him necessarily without giving up everything, then mm-hmm. it's easy. They have to come out of the first round with a quarterback. They have to. And if they don't, then they're kicking the can down the road for some ungodly reason of tanking for Tua or Justin Herbert, which, again, you have to already have those guys graded too, and there's no definitive answer as to whether or not you will be able to acquire them. They're obviously right. going to try to win as many games as possible. It may end up only being three or four, but that doesn't guarantee them the first pick. The Dolphins right now are picking 13th. They probably have the worst roster in the league. Do you know what I mean? They won seven yes. games, and they stink. Mm-hmm. So those players can't tank on the teams. They're playing for another deal next year because they're not going to be on the Giants. So it just they have to come out of this first round with a quarterback, even if it's Josh Rosen and they're trading the 17th pick. Does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely. And two questions I have for you. You mentioned Herbert. You know, he was thinking about coming out this year and decided to go back to Oregon and play another year. Where do you think he would have been ranked? Because you have your finger on the pulse of this thing. So where do you think he would have, like, I know it's hard to say, but...
It is hard to say, but yeah. I think you'd be talking about him maybe between... The Murray thing is such a wild card because the coach is so tied to him
mm-hmm.
in Arizona. That's what's unique about it. But I think he would have been right there in the top three. I mean, you'd be talking about him with Murray and Haskins.
Right. And who do you think?
If I had to guess, if he was in this draft, it would still go Murray and then Herbert and then everybody else. That's my guess.
And it seemed, though, that as the, you know, people started to evaluate Herbert, he kind of cooled off on him. I don't know if you agree, but.
Yeah, they all have warts, you know. I think that's the reality. The Browns hit a home run in the way that Baker was able to come in and play like that, but you saw the other guys struggle at times. I think Darnold's going to be really good long term.
So do I. Yeah, I agree.
I think Josh Allen, I never would draft somebody that has a 54% completion percentage in college. I just wouldn't do that. And I think with Josh Rosen, I actually liked him more than I liked Allen. So I would have drafted him in front of Josh Allen. I know people think that he's this mercurial guy because he's pretty smart and he's not dedicated to football. So that's a tough moniker to carry around with you or a tough characterization to carry around with you. But I think it's unfair for me to buy into that without really knowing. I don't know that. You know what I mean? I hear people say that, but I don't know that for sure, that Josh Rosen isn't dedicated to football or he wants to be an investment banker or an attorney after, like, good for him. That's a good thing. I just want him to be all in on football. He seemed to be all in on football to me last year, and they couldn't have treated him worse. So so that's my thoughts on it. That's where Herbert would be. The tight end thing, I just said it on the last segment. I think Emery's right. I think these guys are both talented, but if you're getting them in the top 10, you have to really pump the brakes and say, is this really a top 10 player? Like, the Lions probably thought that. Yeah, like, Eric Ebron's good, but we spent a top 10 pick on him, and or whatever his top 12 pick on him, and he didn't really do that much for us. It's like, well, because he's not that impactful. Like Emery said.
I love what Hunt.
Do you really feel like you're a tight end away? No.
There you go. I was just going to say that. That was a great quote.
You can use Austin Seferian Jenkins, and you can use Cameron Brake.
He's a Patriot now. Yeah.
Right. Those guys, they help you win football games. You don't have to draft in the top 10. All right, hour number three coming back. George Kurtz going to join us in the next hour.